It's going down right now with the Joseph Bard Podcast. Make sure y'all watch the Joseph Bard Podcast. Ringing off right now. I am the K. I need to kick it free. You know what it is. Salute. Block party action. Me.
Welcome, everybody, to the Joseph Bard Podcast. We are here with Sarah Stapleton Barrera. Sarah Stapleton Barrera, thank you for joining us today on the podcast. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I'm good, trying to stay warm and, you know, get a bunch of stuff done between now and March 1st. So I've been very busy.
You've been very busy. I was reading here that you're a candidate. What are you candidate for? What are you running for?
I'm running for state senate. So the district covers all of Cameron County, part of Hidalgo County, and we go all the way up Clayburg, Kennedy. We've got some of San Patricio. We have part of Nueces. We have B County. So it's like a 3-hour stretch of a district. So it's been quite the adventure.
Wow, that's very interesting. So you know what? Kudos to you. I've met a lot of people in the world, and I've said to myself that usually people are individuals that are standard. However, when we talk about serving, that's going above the standard. And serving is something that, you know, when somebody has the guts to go ahead and put their name on the ballot, they want to serve. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah. So, well, I've been a practicing attorney for the past 12 years and mostly for indigent clients, you know, the poor, the forgotten, and those that need help. So it's always sort of been in my nature to fight for the underdog, you know, for those that are struggling. And, you know, I find myself at point in my life struggling. And I think we've all had situations that we've been in that are uncomfortable and not great and not fun. And, you know, through my experiences, I had a lot of eye openers and recognized that, my gosh, you know, if, you know, I'm an educated person with a degree and I'm struggling to this extent, you know, look at the people around me that don't have what I have. Can you imagine, you know, the obstacles that people are faced with every day? And so, yeah, I threw my hat in the ring back in 2020 and we made a big splash and here we are again. And it's really exciting. I think that if we can win, I feel so hopeful that we can actually make some real change, you know, and people talk about, well, we could change. But I think that this is a true opportunity of reshaping the narrative here in South Texas.
South Texas. So you're originally from Brownsville, Texas?
Originally from Brownsville, born in Harlingen, drove home to Brownsville and, you know, lived here ever since. I took a break when I went to undergrad and to law school. But as soon as I graduated law school, I drove down after taking the bar and raised my 3 kids here and will probably stay here forever.
You know, I've had some attorneys on here on this podcast, you know, and typically they have their own personal story to tell. And that's what I want our listeners to hear about, Sarah. You know, what is your story? I mean, take us back. What drives Sarah Stapleton Barrera?
So I found myself about 8 years ago as a single mom, you know, really struggling, trying to work full time, pay for childcare, deal with healthcare needs. Afford Pampers sometimes was even a really hard time. And I was living in this, you know, in this bad house with horrible electrical, bad water situation. And one night in the middle of the night, I woke up around 12 a.m. and I smelt burning. And there was a fire in the house from this old rusty water heater that we had. And so between my room and between my 2-year-old's nursery, there was a flaming fire. So luckily I, you know, ran to the kitchen, found a fire extinguisher and put this thing out. But I remember at that point in my life thinking, you know, this could have been the worst day of my life. And luckily, I was able to pull myself out of that situation and, you know, get into another living space and, you know, turn things around. But that was a real eye opener for me because, you know, I realized at that point that the system is not set up for single mothers. The system is not set up for those that are struggling. It's just roadblock after roadblock. You know, so it from that moment forward, I did a lot of soul searching and a lot of reflecting and a lot of researching and, you know, research what our current senator had been doing. and was shocked, you know, shocked at what I found, and realized at that point, you know, this is why we're so far behind here in South Texas, because our leaders have been betraying us for so long. So that sort of kickstarted my world into politics, which I quite honestly never thought I would be part of.
You know, it's interesting. Some of the things that you're saying strikes a nerve, and I know it strikes a nerve with a lot of our listeners, you know, because when we talk about the normal person, the working person, the working man, the working woman, you know, we're talking about likely paycheck to paycheck, if at that. And, you know, what people normally say is you got to have about 6 months of pay saved up in your bank account to even, you know, for a rainy day. However, it's difficult, you know, and, you know, with inflation rises, you know, going out, I can understand how you as a single mother might have felt. And I can understand how a lot of our listeners might be feeling. So what is the solution? What is a Sarah Stapleton Barrera solution?
This is the solution. I mean, for so long, we have not had advancements in healthcare and education and, you know, veteran rights and all this stuff that matters down here, because our legislators, there's three things that are happening out there that we need to stop, right? First of all, they get into office and they stay there for a million years. I think that we hugely need to implement term limits. We need to implement finance reform, and we need to make sure that we close these loopholes that allow politicians to get rich, rich, rich while the constituents are struggling. I think that by taking the big money out of politics, getting rid of this whole, you know, I scratch your back, you scratch my back system, will allow us to finally make the advancements. But until we can get, you know, these, you know, for lack of better terms, corrupt politicians and policies out of our way, then we won't.
Yeah, and that's something that strikes a nerve here, and especially in the South Texas area, right? I mean, corruption, you know, the what do you call that? Oh man, I'm drawing a blank here, attorney. I scratch your back, you scratch my back.
Yeah, the whole compadre system, right? The compadrismo stuff. That's the problem, is that, yeah. You know, these guys look to, you know, if they've got a lobbyist or a CEO that says, hey, well, I'll give you a $20,000 donation for your campaign. You just got to make sure that, you know, you're with me on this legislation. And then when it comes to writing this legislation, if it hurts the people of South Texas, but a politician knows that this guy gave him $20,000, who is he going to betray? I mean, that's the problem that we have.
Yeah. You know, I would agree with the whole statement of, like, let's remove big money, corporation money from politics, you know, and we can try to start making waves in a positive direction for the greater good. Nonetheless, corporations have a big stake, right? And that's, there's no law that keeps them from doing that. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, you are. And I think that that's where the balance is not happening.
Right.
Is there's no transparency. So, you know, us as citizens have a hard time understanding why we're being sold out time and time again. But if there's more transparency and ethics in the government, then we can actually hold our politicians accountable. Right.
Yeah. 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 I mean, and with anything, once you start holding people accountable, you know, you start seeing some change. I mean, we can go around in circles with theory, and we'll talk hours about it. But quite honestly, unless you hold people's feet to the fire, you know, then they'll start flinching.
Agreed.
So good, awesome. So you're a mother, and how many children do you have?
I've got three kids. I have a 10-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 3-year-old.
They must be keeping you busy, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's funny. This is my second run. And what I found is, you know, there was a lot of criticism in the beginning. Well, you know, your kids and, you know, you're going to leave them and, you know, all this terrible non-truths, right? But what I've realized is it's really become a family affair. You know, the kids are into it. My husband's into it. So, you know, we do a lot of the traveling together and, you know, hit a lot of fun events that are family friendly. And so it's been, it's been an adventure, and I'm hoping that it's something that my kids, especially my girls, will see later on in life and say, you know what, like, that was some pretty big stuff that we were doing.
It truly is. I mean, I've been to Canada myself, and I've gone through this whole thing twice. And I would agree with you that my children are usually the ones that are like all into it, and they love it, right? And there's a reflective piece. So, you know, kudos to you and kudos to your family for supporting you. That is amazing. But tell us a little bit about your family. Like, what makes them so fun, so unique?
Well, we're a bunch of weirdos. I mean, we're, you know, very just, you know, I think you've got to have some sort of an extreme personality to jump into the world of politics. But for my husband and I, it's the whole campaign is like a bonding thing between him and I, because it's like a project that we're working on together. So it gives us something to get excited about, and then, you know, to, you know, get scared about, and then to have, you know, bad moments and good moments. So it's like, I feel as if the experience brings us together as a couple, just because it's such a unique experience that, you know, not everyone I think out there has experience. So
we might have to take this on tour pretty soon, and we might start having a sala de parejas and letting them know that this is an opportunity to bring couples together. We might have something there.
I think so.
Yeah, you know, in other news, we have a freeze going on, and last time our area experienced a freeze. You know, the governor was, the governor and some of his buddies out there were taking trips to Cancun and, you know, trying to figure out what happened with ERCOT. Tell us a little bit about that, and what's your take on all that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a nightmare. I mean, personally for myself, we were out for 5 days, you know, with three little kids, you know, it's a struggle. So we were, you know, luckily able to find shelter at a family member's house. But, you know, luckily I had family members that still had electricity. Right. And so imagine those people that didn't. I mean, I think it was over 200 people in our state died because of that circumstance. And, you know, when it comes down to it, Texas is in an extremely unique position because we are the only state that has its own grid. All the other states are united, in some sort of way regarding the different grids. So we have our own system. And clearly it hasn't been managed in a way that's been effective. Major transformations need to happen. I mean, obviously it's always about money, right? We need money to ensure this is a basic necessity, that people aren't freezing and dying and, you know, burning fires in their living rooms and putting tents in their kids' bedrooms. I mean, that's what it was. And, you know, it's here we are again. And we'll see what happens. I mean, looks like your lights are on and so are mine, but you know, there's no guarantee, right? How long that'll last.
I mean, that's true. I mean, that's true and clear with life. I mean, there's no guarantee with life. Today we're here, tomorrow we're not. I mean, just recently I was listening to Common. Are you familiar with Common? He did a little tour here in the Rio Grande Valley.
Yes.
And one of the things that he was asked, and you know, with regards to politics, you know, his response was like, you know what, these politicians need to stop with the bullshit, bottom line. And it resonated to a lot of what you're talking about. And I would agree with you on some of these items. And because, again, we're trying to do good for good. But there's a greater need. You know, we have to look at different things here. I mean, we have homelessness, we have education, we have health. I mean, health has been at the helm of it all most recently, especially with COVID. How do you think your area in Texas has been handling COVID?
Not well. I mean, we have the highest uninsured rate in the whole state. I think we're at 37% of our individuals are uninsured, which means people that are sick don't go to the doctor. People that are sick don't get their medication. People that are sick, you know, stand on the corner and, you know, have fundraisers. And that's what it looks like here. And, you know, to be in 2022, and people still having to do these, you know, online GoFundMes and all this sort of stuff to pay for basic healthcare. Mm-hmm. It's criminal. I mean, it's just criminal. There's not much more that I can say. But you know, when COVID first hit, we were the last to receive supplies. We, you know, our hospitals filled up quicker than anybody's. We were the last to get air, to get ventilators and tanks and all that sort of stuff. So we were hit hard, considering we have a huge population of asthmatics and diabetics here in South Texas.
I would agree. I mean, in South Texas, the two greatest leading factors that we have here is diabetes and obesity. And how do you stop that? Well, you need preventative medicine. I mean, you need to make sure that the education piece component of preventative medicine is there. Is it happening? Is it not happening? I mean, is there enough doctors? Is there enough nurses? It's a whole topic of conversation that we can keep on having for about a year and a half, 2 years, and see what we can do to make it better. I mean, I know veterans health is another issue that's huge. But nonetheless, you know, most recently, like, our family has been struck with some cancer, and you know, one of the people always have to go to Houston, to MD Anderson, you know, so would it benefit our area to have a cancer hospital in our area?
Yeah. You know, I've thought about this question a lot, and the answer is absolutely. I mean, we have these high rates. We absolutely need our own cancer resources here in the Valley. But simultaneously, along with that, we've got to make sure that we close, that we expand Medicare and healthcare, right? Otherwise, we'll have this big, beautiful, brand new cancer hospital, but 37% of our people can't even walk through the front doors. So we've got to expand healthcare, and we've got, once we can get that accomplished, then I think that, yeah, I mean, it opens the doors to all sorts of growth, assuming that our state legislators will actually allocate the funding where it's so desperately needed. And that's obviously down here.
So help me understand what you know about the hospital district that has been shot down a couple of times here in our area.
Yeah, I mean, I know that it's insufficient. I think that, you know, since COVID hit, clearly there's not enough beds. And I think we're seeing that all over the state. But I think it's, you know, an extreme problem down here. You know, I've had a couple family members that were sick with COVID. And luckily, my sister was living in Austin and found some air tanks and was able to drive them down. But otherwise, I'm not sure how that would have ended up. So if there was any time in the world to expend healthcare, it would be right now during a global pandemic. I mean, it's a no-brainer. And it's unfathomable is why it didn't happen in the last legislative session.
Wow. I mean, obviously there's some setbacks and there's obstacles. I mean, when we talk about healthcare, I know there's individuals, friends of mine that are nurses. And, you know, when this was happening and, you know, these contracts, travel agencies were popping up and they were saying, come work for us. And, you know, we'll go ahead and pay you. And, you know, the hourly rate was amazing for these people. But what ended up happening was that these hospitals were losing their staff, right?
Yeah.
So then they were saying, well, help us maintain our staff. But on the flip side, I mean, you have these CFOs and the CEOs that are making buku bank, right? And yet they still can't figure out on how to raise, you know, and match what these agencies were paying. So I think I know most recently there's going to be something called the Million Nurse March in Washington come May 11th. And, you know, part of that is, the, you know, keeping up with the wages. What's your take on that?
Yeah, look, you know, the talk is always about a living wage and what the minimum wage should be, right? But this is the thing, even if we're talking about lifting the minimum wage to $15 an hour, which it is in, you know, several states around the United States, do you think that for example, a single dad with five kids working two jobs can live off of $15 an hour? I mean, is that really a living wage?
Well, the first thing I got to say is, why is he having five kids? No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, it happens, right? So we've seen it happen.
Real talk.
I mean, certainly we've got to figure out a way that people can work and not have to live like we were talking about, paycheck to paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
But certainly the minimum wage does need to be raised. And I think that there needs to be a way of looking at circumstances and getting people, you know, trained in the workforce and providing more opportunities for people to dig themselves out of these holes that are so cyclical and that, you know, unfortunately seem to be passed down from generation to generation.
Well, I mean, and I acknowledge everything you say, and I want to add that in order to break that whole cyclical cycle that we're talking about, I mean, families need to understand that there's a better way of doing things, but it starts with educating themselves with respect to how do we get out of this? You know, if you're making $8 to $15 an hour, there's no way in hell as to why you should be spending above your means as far as like taking out a brand new truck, as far as, you know, let's go out on this spending spree. Let's go take these trips, you know, keeping up with the Joneses type of thing, right? You've heard that before. And you know, unfortunately, we have a high percentage of families that do that. So when can they ever get out of that? Well, what I'd like to add to is that, you know, when we start educating our children on investments, on, you know, insurances that are needed, life insurance, for example, you know, we start developing a better opportunity for our future generations. Granted, we're not going to be the ones living that life, but if your goal is to having your family or your family's family, you know, get out of that rut, then we should start having those financial conversations. I think.
Yeah, I think you make a good point. I mean, and a lot of that can be taught in our public school system. You know, economics, I think, is huge. You're right. Learning how to do just basic skills that a lot of, you know, 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds don't know and have to learn how to do the hard way. Right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. If those skills are implemented into our high school classrooms, then certainly it'll give kids more of an opportunity to get out of these problematic circles that they find themselves in.
Yeah. And to me, I know I'm just one person and I didn't learn these things in high school, but I really wish I would have had these conversations with mom and dad. That way I could have, you know, graduated and, you know, I did know that my credit score was something I needed to maintain and have good standings. But credit is one thing, actually having it is another. And, you know, like that's a big difference there, right?
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah. Sarah, hey man, tell us a little bit about your top five on your playlist. What are you listening to right now? Like what makes you happy? What makes you, you know, go get them and stuff like that?
Oh man. I mean, I'm a pop junkie, you know, I just like top 40 stuff, whatever's on the radio. I'm good with. I'm actually was a music major in college and got a vocal performance degree. So that was sort of my background. Was music. And I used to travel around, you know, different parts and with different types of bands and all sorts of stuff back in my 20s. So it was really something that I loved.
What did you play?
I played the guitar, I played the piano, but mostly, I mean, I was a vocalist. That was my main, and I used to sing weddings and that sort of stuff. So that was...
you heard it here first. I had not heard Sarah is a singer and a musician. But it sounds like Sarah can sing at your next boda, man. I really think so.
I sure can. Spent about a decade doing weddings. So
what is it that you would normally sing? Like, I mean, is it like mariachi or is it like English?
I can do a little bit of everything. I mean, from, you know, top 40 hits to Selena stuff to Ave Maria's. I mean, whatever you want, I can pull out.
Wow. What's your most your greatest memory of you singing?
I spent about 6 months in Nashville and sang up and down the Broadway strip in Nashville. I had one song at each of the little venues that I would sing on Friday nights, and it was country music at that point because I was in Nashville, and that was a beautiful time in my life and really, really cool memories.
Wow. Hey, so was it something like this?
Something like that.
Sarah, go ahead and sing it.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot on this one.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's what we do, but I'm kidding. Sometimes. needless to say, I did want to ask you about, I believe he's your treasurer for your campaign.
Pepe Serna.
If for those of you listening, Pepe Serna is a very famous actor that has, if many of you know, you would know him in the movie Scarface. And the most famous line that I can remember is, "This doesn't look like me." "Hey, you look pretty, man." Pepe Serna. So who is he, and how did he commit to your campaign?
So he's my tío through marriage. He's my husband's tío. And so he's, you know, part of the family. And we asked him, "Hey, you know, we're doing this. Would you want to hop on and help?" And he is amazing and said yes. And he did a podcast with us not too long ago. And he's more than, you know, just someone that's helping. I mean, he really has been an inspiration to me. And I think to the whole Chicano culture, I mean, from back in the 80s, you know, he was a real revolutionary and movement shaker and maker. And, you know, I'm extremely proud to have him in my corner.
That's awesome. I mean, and you, like you mentioned, when you have an individual like him, like himself, that is actually wanting to be a part of the cause, it sounds like he's very political and very strong in his beliefs. So what are some of the things that he's guided you with, you know, as far as your campaign?
Yeah, I mean, when we first started talking about it, you know, he just, his main thing is, look, I've always been for the people. I mean, you know, he has no ego about him that cares about the rich and famous or the celebrities or the politicians. He doesn't care about any of that. Right. And so, you know, his main piece of advice is, hey, just stay with the gente, stay with the people. That's where you belong. That's where I belong. And as long as we stay with our people, then, you know, then we'll be fine. And it resonated with me. I think, you know, I see people that are running for office fall into these traps of, you know, trying to impress the who's who of Whoville, but it's not about that, right? Yeah, so. Yeah.
Well, that's a very insightful message that anybody can relate to. It doesn't matter what you know, stop trying to impress people, you'll be fine. You know, I think when we stay true to our beliefs and to our common to who we are, then there's no reason why we should ever fail, right? But needless to say, I mean, it's been a pleasure definitely speaking with you, Sarah. It's been awesome. I wish you nothing but the best on your campaign. Win, lose, or draw. There is no draws, but win or lose, I think we will definitely be seeing you more often. Thank you, Sarah, for everything. Appreciate that.
No, thank you for having me. This is really, you know, I think out of all the political things that I have to do, podcasts are always something I look forward to because they're fun and, you know, light and keep me on my toes. So I appreciate you having me.
That's what's up. No, not a problem. Thank you for being here, Sarah. Once again, Sarah Stapleton Barrera. Once again, she's running for what? What are you running for?
State Senate, District 27.
All right. Well, nothing but luck. That's it for today. Thank you so much for being here.
Bye-bye.